And from this passage, beginning today, I'm going to preach a three-part series on the prodigal family, each sermon focusing on a viewpoint of a different player in the passage. So this Sunday is the last sermon in the My Daughters series and simultaneously the first sermon in the Players in the Prodigal series. I'll spend this in the next 2 weeks, one on the prodigal son, and then the prodigal father, and then the older brother. Today is about the prodigal father. Remember, I got here from Kayla, our 6.5-year-old. She went through a couple of things this year that were, for Melissa and I, signs of things to come. So I was immediately drawn here. The first thing Kayla did this year was go to a roller skating rink. Her first time. She gets the skates on, and immediately, for me, it's 1981, but she's thinking here and now. We're inching our way around the rink. It takes us 20 minutes to make one revolution. I keep holding on because she clearly hasn't got this. She keeps saying, "Daddy, let go, let go." So we finally make it all the way back around, and she's standing no longer on the rink but in the snack area. And she says again in front of the other parents, "Daddy, let go." So I do what I always do. I made a joke to all the other parents standing around, saying something like, all of a sudden, it's freshman year in her dorm room, and I'm trying to think of excuses to hang around just a little bit longer. As the words are just fresh out of my mouth, still lingering out there in the ether, Kayla does an immediate face plant. To make matters worse, on the way down, she slams her face into a chair, not just any chair, one of those planted in the floor, plastic, hard as all get out, more of a bench than a chair things. She begins to wail. The only thing that would make it better was blue cotton candy. She spent the rest of her time at the roller rink in my arms. Letting go is never easy. But in hindsight, what choice did I have? We did it again when she started kindergarten this past August. She took it in stride. We were a mess for at least a week before the event, increasingly worse each day up to the big one. But we put her on the bus and then got into our car and followed her bus to school. We were told we were allowed to do that. She got off the bus, gave us a hug, and said, "You can go now." She loves school, and we love that she's growing. With those things going on, I was led to this passage. Hear now the word of the Lord as it comes to us in the Gospel of Luke. Listen. Then Jesus said, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me.' So he divided his property between them. A few days later, the younger son gathered all he had and traveled to a distant country and there squandered his property in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout that country and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country who sent him into his field to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, 'How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough and to spare? But here I am, dying of hunger. I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.' So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Quickly, bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals upon his feet, and get the fatted calf and kill it, and let us go and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to celebrate. Now his elder son was in the field, and when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the slaves and asked what was going on. He replied, "Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf because he got him back safe and sound." Then he became angry and refused to go in. His father came out and began to plead with him. But he answered his father, "Listen, for all those years I have been working like a slave for you, and I have never disobeyed your command, yet you have never given me even a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came back, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him." Then the father said to him, "Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice, because this brother of yours was dead and has come to life. He was lost and has been found." The grass withers, the flower falls, but the word of the Lord endures forever. Thanks be to God. The son comes to the father and says, "Give me what is coming to me once you're dead." I don't know what I'd say to that as the father, but I know I wouldn't take it well. Father is better off to the son dead than alive. Quite a message to give good old dad, don't you think? "I'd be happier if you were dead" is not quite the message you'll see in the Hallmark stores for the coming Mother's Day and Father's Day cards. At least not where I shop. What kind of father is this? Jesus tells this story as a third parable in a series to answer the questions that the Pharisees have about Jesus' tendency to hang around with tax collectors and sinners. But what father hears this from a child and says, "Okay, here you go"? I presume that the father is no idiot. I presume that he knows that his son taking the inheritance and skipping town is a likely scenario. I wonder how long it took the father to go through with it. Doesn't say whether he agonized over the decision day and night or whether he contacted his legal team within the hour and got the paperwork processed. We don't know his reasons. Maybe this was a gamble, a hope that the son would see his father's love and be moved to stay. Or maybe this was the desperate move of a desperate man who did not know what to do. But to Jesus, who made up the parable, that's not an important detail. What is important is that the father lets the prodigal son go, lets the prodigal make his own decisions. Whether or not you're a parent, you know that letting someone else you love make a mistake that you have either made or know how to avoid is one of the hardest things in the world to do. It's why we give unsolicited advice to anyone who comes too close to us, even people on the street whom we've never met before. But boy, howdy, can we give unsolicited advice to family and friends, can't we? We can give it, we just never seem to want to receive unsolicited advice. That's what makes it unsolicited. People haven't asked for it, but we don't have a problem giving it nonetheless, do we? The father in this story is likened to God the Father, which is why this parable came to mind when dealing with Kayla, who has this year been growing up, and that means in no small part gaining some independence from us, her parents. In the parable, the prodigal father lets the son go. My guess, and this is just my guess, is that this was not an easy decision, mostly because the prodigal father waits at the end of the town in hopes that the son will one day come back. The father has to understand the possibility exists that the son may never come back, or if he comes back, he will be totally and completely defeated, or maybe worse, more full of himself because of some series of victories. The father willingly gives up control of the son, knowing that only in freedom can either his son or himself be content. It's that way for us who are parents. I got this tiny book here called Father to Daughter. It has some pithy advice, but it's called Life Lessons on Raising a Girl. It's appropriate since we have two girls. One of them, several of them have come to mind recently, like this one on page 194. There will be times when she will knock you over with her selflessness, tenderness, and gentleness. This is the real her. Or this one on 171. There will be days when you think you've raised an alien. Those are the same days she feels like she's being raised by one. And this one on 134. Accept the fact that the loving, tender angel you spent the last decade with may disappear sometimes. She will return. That's the hope. But the ability to trust in that is a difficult task, and one that anyone who's had to let go of anything understands. If the parable of the prodigal family as told by Jesus is meant, at least in some aspects, to parallel the Father with God the Father, then we see a God who lets us go, lets us make our own decisions, lets us take advantage the way the prodigal son took advantage, lets us go. We see a God who gives total freedom to the children of God and says, even when you tell me that I am dead to you, I will still love you, still hope to see you, still wait at the edge of town just for the sight of you. And when the prodigal comes back, when we come back to God the Father, God welcomes us with open arms, not with hostile criticism or with, have we learned our lesson yet? Or even with, before you come back, I'm going to need an apology and some sort of reassurance that you won't do this again. Or even, my trust will take a long time to regain. None of that. The Father is so overjoyed, that's the word the text uses, that He throws a party. Of course He does. Anyone who has had to let someone or something go knows what agony it is. To see it rewarded with the return of that which you love is pure, unadulterated joy. Nothing but the fatted calf will suffice. It is time. You'd better get your party on. When you or I play the part of the prodigal son, God, first off, has given us the freedom to do so, has let us go so that we can do whatever we want. And then as God has let us go, God has given us grace so that when we do make bad decisions, God does not give us the riot act, does not make us do penance, just throws a party in our honor for the fact that we're back home. To see the joy of the Father as the prodigal comes back is to understand, in part, why the Father let the Son go in the first place. I felt terrible for about a week when Kayla smashed her face at the skating rink. But for Christmas this year, her favorite gift was a pair of roller skates. And she's back on the horse again, so to speak, skating through our neighborhood as much as she can. Fortunately, into our new neighborhood, there's no snack area for which she could fall into. But you and I both know she's going to fall again. And even though she goes out covered in more armor than a knight in a full chain-link suit, she will get hurt again. But we've got to give her room, got to let her grow into the wonderful young woman that she is already becoming. God knows that it won't be easy.
But God knows, and knows from experience with each and every one of us, that it's worth it. Amen.